The following Dharma talk was given by Jody Hojin Kimmel at the Zen Center of New York City, Fire Lotus Temple. Hojin Sensei is the abbot of the Zen Center and head priest at Zen Mountain Monastery.
Good morning, Brooklyn. A lot we're holding. It's just recognize this. Shugen Roshi gave me this new kutz, we call it in the tradition, that the teacher has this staff, because we can use it in teachings to show things or tap on a student if we want to open up some space. And I'm getting used to it, how to hold it and everything, and I realized it's a question mark. And I really appreciate that. And he said, oh, I can take that thing off the bottom if you don't want it there. But where it hits is the grief meridian, so which is right here, which is your lungs. And I realized I keep pressing there, and it opens this channel. And I was like, no, I'm not taking that off. You know, so it's kind of nice. And helps me, so I like looking at this question mark and holding this tension of seeming opposites that we're in, like this grief. And then I look out the window and I see these Brooklyn dogs with these amazing outfits on. coats better than I have, hats, hoods, shoes even. And so each moment has so much that we can turn towards and appreciate and open to and break open to. So that kind of is what I was holding. It's not always easy to talk and come up with a talk. I don't know about you, if you had to do that every week, but it's a good, I pray for inspiration and encouragement to fulfill my responsibilities. It's one of the lines in the transmission ceremony to the ancestors. I pray for inspiration. It's the first time I saw pray in the Buddhist language, and I was like, wow. And it's right there. I pray for inspiration and encouragement to fulfill my responsibilities. And I think we can all say that on some level. And I was communicating with Shoan and Hogen Sensei, and Hogen wrote back, when? All dharmas are Buddha dharma. There is birth and death, enlightenment and delusion, suffering and pain, joy and love, and here it all is. And yesterday we had a precepts retreat, which was very nourishing to look at a time when we don't have a lot of moral fiber, and this is not unique in history, as we know, but communication is very unique, how that moves. But to look at the precepts of the tradition and how much wisdom, I mean, it sounds weird, how much wisdom Buddha had, but damn, this guy. And even if he wasn't him, whatever happened, whatever we got passed on, it's a high bar, but it works. It does relieve suffering. It really does. When practice is doing, and we have to actually practice it. It is the medicine in all circumstances, because in his time, great conflict. Great schisms, hardships, both person-made and natural disasters. So that all happened, and it could be heart-opening and heart-breaking. It's one reality, heart-breaking and heart-opening. So I kind of wanted to look at that today. That's what I'm holding. The Buddha knew this, he saw it, and he expressed this and offered it as a path of peace and liberation, true liberation. Not easy. Dharma is not easy to understand. We can't grasp it. We can't hold it. But there's something that we're doing with our heart, mind, body, speech, body, mouth, thought, that can be in accord and in harmony with things as they are. Doesn't mean you numb out, you don't see anything horrific. I'm not talking about that. That's the multiplicity in the not two, in the sameness. There's, because it has nothing fixed, we have such a multiplicity. And how does that all live together is what the human project is. So I like when the Dalai Lama says, I'm just a simple monk. I feel like that too. I'm just a simple monastic practicing the Buddha Dharma. I just wrote down, I hear this refrain, I don't trust anything anymore. And, you know, I know some of us are maybe just be meeting the Dharma or new to practice. And of course, the most difficult thing is we're learning just in Zazen is letting things arise, whatever's on our mind or in our body, letting these things arise to be seen and trusting that's our wisdom. That, like, what a gift. Like, don't be afraid of what arises in your mind or anywhere. Just see it. And the hard part is that how we perceive is through our senses, and that they're open and they're pure when things arrive, but then we get hijacked. And all of our history and everything just comes flooding in. We know this. But what part of it is benefiting? How do we use all of that, not deny it, anything that's happened to be of benefit, and not create more harm? That's sort of at the basis of it. So I wanted to, I take up this koan, see what shape-shifting is called for. And I'm guessing that this is not foreign territory for any of us. Not letting things, when do we let things fall apart? When do we keep them together? The truth of those seeming dualities. Is falling apart or keeping together two different things? I don't know. You know, when life and death are one reality, something needs to come to, when something dies, something comes to life. If something comes to life, something dies. We can't have one without the other. They're inseparable, but we can look at different things. We can shine the light when one side is illuminated, another side is dark, but we have to see that it's all always whole, never broken. So this koan from the Hidden Lamp, which I've done before but came back to me in a new way. It's one of the ones I love. And the Hidden Lamp is stories of awakened women ancestors over 25 centuries. And we chanted this woman's name, Chioni, known as Mugai Neodai. And it's called No Water, No Moon. No water, no moon. And it's and I wanted to combine that with another story about Avalokiteshvara, Bodhisattva, whose head explodes from the amount of suffering in the world. The Bodhisattva of compassion even broke apart. But that just opened more 10,000 hands and arms. So, looking at this, discovering that things don't, that freedom doesn't depend on things staying intact. So as we listen, it's an invitation to not analyze too quickly, but just notice, just to notice where in your own life you're trying to keep things together. Maybe discerning, is it time to let it break open? Are they different? So just a little bit about Chioni. And also, actually, I brought this out. I see it here now. To keep the four reminders. These are four turning reflections. We did this in the precepts that can strengthen our intention and to practice, to stay with the Dharma. So it's important to remember these are four great truths intended to challenge our complacency and motivate us to walk the spiritual path, if you will. The first is the reflection to contemplate is the rarity of the preciousness of a human life. Just to contemplate that. We may not even give it a second thought. I'm here. I have this life. But to contemplate the rarity and preciousness of a human life. Impermanence, that death is inevitable and unpredictable. No one can escape death. I don't care how hard they work on it. And no one knows when it'll come. Doesn't differentiate between tasks done and undone. And then this may sound also like the five remembrances. Everyone is of the, you know, we can become ill, old age, sickness, and death, and that we can't take anything with. We'll lose everything we find near and dear. And the only thing that we inherit, are inheritors of, is how do we act? That consciousness, that is what goes on. Suffering is inevitable. Be aware of the disadvantages of samsara, which is spinning in our delusion, our ignorance, just spinning in it. No one escapes pain, physical pain, loss, dishonor, disrespect, loneliness, anxiety, panic, stress, fear, dissatisfaction, even among the most fortunate among us, escapes, whoever that might be. I think we're all. And then karma, the power of our actions. That these are the four reflections to four great truths of our being a human being. So, Chioni, Mugai Neodai. She was actually the first Zen abbot, first woman Zen abbot. She went on to have her own temple. So there's a lot that I look at her for, how she did things and what she was about. And she was ordained and lived in Japan in the 13th century. Chioni was her birth name and Mugai Neodai was her ordination name. The details of her life aren't completely certain. There's several stories, but the heart of her story is very clear. She wanted to practice the Dharma and she wanted to practice Zen, which was available at that time. And what's striking too is that she didn't feel like the kind of person who should be practicing. In some accounts, she is described as a servant in a Zen convent, poor, busy, unable to read or write, working before dawn until late at night. And in another telling, she comes from a very privileged background. But, and where kind of this non-self was misunderstood and gave sort of permission to the samurai to kill. Because if there isn't one, it's empty. There's no killer, nothing killed. Misunderstood, and she somehow in her gut knew that was so, but she didn't. She needed to find out. So But in either version, it seems like she still carried the same feeling. I'm not enough for this. It was interesting to read that. And so in one account, she worked constantly. Her life was ordinary, demanding, and full of responsibilities, whichever version. And still, something in her wouldn't let go of the question of awakening. She knew something about awakening, whatever that meant. And in one recorded encounter, she showed up at the doorstep of a monastery, so she started walking. She had a child. She was married a few times, but when her husband died, and one died, and I think she got married again, that's when she started this, to start really going to these monasteries. I think she was in her 40s or maybe close to 50, which was coming to the end of one's life at that time. But she was always on her mind. And so she went to this doorstep of a monastery and asked for face-to-face teaching, Dokusan. And she went in to this person who was her teacher to become. And she said, he said, "How can I help you?" And as he gave her a cup of tea, I don't do that, but maybe I should. Long enough to have a cup of tea. And she asked, "What is Zen?" And it seemed like that was what she asked at every temple she went to. "What is Zen?" And he answered, holding her in her eyes, the record says, Zen is the heart of the one who asks, not someone else's words. So she entered that monastery to train. And this is where the koan picks up. It seems like while she was there, there was a monk in charge of, like, who did what. And didn't like that she was there, so he gave her this ratty old bucket and told her that she was to collect water, but the bucket was falling apart, okay? So here's how the cone goes. One day, she approached, there was another elderly nun there, and asked directly, almost desperately, "I'm of humble birth. I can't read or write and must work all the time. Is there any possibility I can attain the way of Buddha, even though I have no skills?" And the nun didn't scold her or reassure her in a sentimental way. She said, "In Buddhism, there are no distinctions between people. What matters is the desire to awaken and the cultivation of a heart of great compassion. That's what matters. If you want to know your true nature, you must turn toward the source of your delusive thoughts. This is called Zazen." So she took this to heart, Chioni, at that time, and she didn't withdraw from her life. She didn't wait for better conditions. She practiced right in the middle of her days, working, cleaning, carrying water, sitting whenever she could. One of her daily tasks was to fetch water using an old bucket held together by thin strips of bamboo. It leaked. She kept trying to repair it, adding this strip, tightening that one, doing her best to make it hold. Of course, after months, years, really, of brokenhearted practice, one night she went out to draw water under a full moon. As she leaned over the well, imagine this, see her there, she leans over the well, she put the bucket down, and suddenly the bottom of the bucket gave way, and the water poured out, and with it, the reflection of the moon vanished. That did something to her. And that moment, what she had been struggling to hold together fell completely away, just poured out. She wrote this poem. "With this and that, I tried to keep the bucket together, and then the bottom fell out. Where water does not collect, the moon does not dwell." How does this relate to seeing what arises, releasing? In a sense, if we do immerse ourselves in Zen practice, we do need to recognize our willingness to fall apart in some ways and come together in some ways. And I've been practicing many years, and ever since I was able to read Chione's verse, I have been keenly aware of this constant tension of keeping the bucket together, fixing and caring for things that might need to stay together, holding both of those. When do I fix things and care for things that need to stay together, and when does it fall apart? And if I can do that willingly. Sometimes there's no choice. It's just ruptured. We can't hold it together. We have no control, really. So what do we do in those times? I'm sure everyone's familiar with this. The royal rupture. Some of us very young at different points in our life. And they happen all along. Where do we go when we let go completely? What happens when our heart breaks and we release everything? Where does the moon go when the reflection disappears? Where do we find the self? The Sufi poet Rumi writes, "You have to keep breaking your heart until it opens, until there's a breakthrough." And then in that, if we can allow that, that access I spoke to you, that it doesn't end with the personal, that since we are interbeing, interconnected, vast, that channel opens up. We have access to that if we can be alert and see that. Bodhidharma said, it all makes sense, that whatever is breaking on some level, there's a knowing it makes sense. As much as we wouldn't wish it upon anyone or to happen in such ways, it's happening. It happened. And so how do we have access to something that's not just the personal, but the universe that wants to nourish and has goodness, and open that channel? We don't know that we have that. And that's where faith is born. That's where faith in the Dharma is born, whatever you want to call that. If you're new to the Dharma, what is that peace in your life that you trust, that you take refuge in, that as much as it's disappearing, dismantling, There's something in that that is real and opening. And so I went to this story about Avalokiteshvara, who's a bodhisattva. And actually, there was a nice article before I found this, because that came to my mind, but there was someone who wrote something called When Bodhisattvas Break. And I was like, wow, what a score. I want to read some of theirs. This is, her name is Lama Karma Yeshe Chodron, who's a scholar from the Kagyu lineage of Tibetan Buddhism. And so I want to share some of her reflections. But the story of Avalokiteshvara is the bodhisattva who vows not to turn away from the suffering in the world. So their name, Avalokiteshvara, means one who hears and sees the sounds of the cries of the world and stays facing. They're also coursing in Prajnaparamita, as we chanted this morning, Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva, doing deep Prajnaparamita, clearly saw emptiness, the vastness of every condition, and how that can relieve misfortune and pain when we have either start with the concept of it, and then it becomes how you see. That gets deeper and deeper into us. So how the vow is simple and impossible to hear the cries of all beings and respond. We start here, of course. We gotta hear our own cries, really. Because that again opens up, if we're willing to break that open and hear that, that brings in more arms and eyes for us to use. According to the story, Avalokiteshvara looks fully into samsara, our spinning world, into war, into grief, illness, injustice, heartbreak, and doesn't avert their gaze. So this is us, each one of us too. And at a certain point, the weight of that suffering is too much for a single form to hold, and their head explodes, shatters, trying to hold all that. And I was remembering when I read that Shugen's mom, Shugen Roshi's mother, she was a potter. I had a nice connection with her. She was a mime and a potter and a clown. And her and I were just like, we couldn't wait to get together to play. And so she would come up to the clay studio and she made this Avalokiteshvara and she just kept piling these heads up. And it went about this high. And so I fired it later, months later, and the top head blew. And I said, Nels, the top head shattered. Like, it was just like one of those gifts from the universe. Like, she didn't plan that. Why didn't the other heads explode? Like, that top head exploded. We had such a good laugh. And Avalokiteshvara knows this is not a failure of compassion, that they can't hold it. It's not a failure. It's what happens when compassion is taken to heart. It's when we really care. And we can't hold it all. And it explodes. Our head explodes. Avalokiteshvara, what appears after the breaking is not withdrawal, but functioning. It needs to break open to function better, to have the functioning come into the world. And then the head shattered, compassion multiplied. No more control. More ways to meet what is. That's what happened. More ways of responding are possible, because that was just too, the view was too, needed to be larger. Right? It's not that there wasn't compassion there, just it's like we don't see what we don't see. And so more needs to come in and function. And so for me, this story reframes some about letting the bottom fall out. Let body and mind, trusting body and mind to drop away in practice and re-entering the fray to the degree we can. And when I say fall away, those of you who are new, it's just what you've been learned to do. Setting aside when you see the spinning of samsara, the stories, the narratives, the blah, 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 blah. Not to hate it, nothing's wrong with your mind. All of us have it. Don't think we're all not sitting here like just like purity plus. I mean, we are, but we're practicing releasing that and then coming back, and there's those gaps where you might feel this falling away. It's scary. Some of us get scared and we have to start thinking or move because we're wondering, where are we going to go? What are we going to be? Am I still going to be able to relate? Like, you know, some Zen weirdness might come up. So I can call it something we've read. So sometimes what shatters is not the heart itself, but more so our ideas, our concepts, our identities, our limitations, the views that need shape-shifting, essentially what is not serving. What is not serving? And so we can refind again, what is the most important thing for you? What is the most important thing in your gut, in your life? That we each return to that. one heart, one role, one identity can't carry the vow alone. It carries the vow. It can't carry it alone. The breaking allows refuge to become collective, distributed, shared. So the scope of a bodhisattva's vow is immense, and it's interdependent. I'll say more about that if it comes up. I'll read some of her things. So Chioni's bucket breaks, and the moon disappears. Notice what the nun says to her in her dialogue. If you want to know your true nature, you need to deny your delusive thoughts, turn away from them, push them down, suffocate them, or bury them. No, she said, if you want to know your true nature, you need to turn to the source of your delusive thoughts, turn toward them, because the Dharma gates are boundless. It's a gate to see what they are, to see, put light. That's enlightenment, to enlighten, to come out of a piece of ignorance. That's enlightenment. It happens all along. It's not like the 4th of July on your seat at one moment, bagumba, and Dada used to say, you sit there and go, do me. He said, no, we're doing it. We're doing it. We're practicing it. And this light, enlightenment happens moment to moment, has potential, moment to moment to moment to moment. It does. It continues endlessly. So we don't like, okay, turning in my cushion, all done. Those are some of the things that have to explode. And you know it, you see it, you know when you come out of a moment of like what you thought, and then it's clear, and then how much starts the access that happens when that comes clear. Nobody gave you that. That's what Buddha said. It's direct experience. It's not going to come externally. It's our direct personal experience that we can rely on. Nobody gives that to us. This is really important. Delusive thoughts, becoming lost, where we become lost, where we read into things, lost in the habits of misperception. Comes so fast. That's why I protect those doors. Because when that fills in, we lose. We get lost. And we fall right into what we know because that's comfortable. And that edge, that razor's edge of like, is possible. It's just a bit of wonder, a question, questioning it. See, I can use it. So we close ourselves off from insight, holding an illusion of the perfect bucket. And that's, then how do we keep holding that together? Everywhere we go is a potential door for liberation, even to the depths of our own personal hell. I always say, I'm going there because I can fire pots. If we can keep our eyes open as we enter, that's what practice gives us. Keeping our eyes and ears open to the best we can. We will fail, we will come back to the best we can. What's the most important thing for you? It's hard to trust this, and yet it's true from my experience. There isn't a single thing in the world that holds together forever, no matter how fiercely we try to make it so, including our own insight. So, don't look at me. No, I mean that in a good way. I'm you. I'm a teacher. I'm studying my life. I'm sharing that with you. Everything will break apart, even our most cherished understandings. Sometimes the very thing we dread, the worst thing, can turn out to be just the thing we need. And sometimes if someone told us that while we're in it, get that. You know, do you ever have somebody tell you while you're like in that ruptured moment, don't worry, everything's going to be fine. And at the same time, you're like, thank you. Like, it's so great, like, to hear that. And another part of you could be just like, not now. I'm in my hell. I have to go through this before I come out the other side. I can't quite go there yet. But okay, thank you. I know you care. I know you care. Yeah. If we can completely accept that brokenness, knowing there's wholeness, then the breakthrough is possible, because it's always whole. There's, you know, Ajahn Chah said, you know, somebody shows me a glass or a teacup of ceramic, I already see it's shattered. And then I can enjoy its preciousness. It's so precious then, because I already know it's shattered. And I really appreciate that teaching. So it may sound strange, bewildering, that the things we cling to for protection can all too quickly become the things that imprison us. There may be times that break us open that should not be, we think that this shouldn't be so. This should not be happening. And it is. So what we have to say about it doesn't necessarily help. It's happening. So Avalokiteshvara, she writes, for a long time, Avalokiteshvara emanates the benevolent and powerful wisdom light. No, I don't need that. She says, I like what she says about the bodhisattva's vow. A bodhisattva is one who, you can consider that to be, I do, every one of you here, because you're at a Dharma center. Must be something going on in your line that you want to stay in the world to relieve suffering and practice compassion and find wisdom. A bodhisattva's vow is sturdy, undaunted. Avalokiteshvara continues for longer, still casting their loving gaze throughout samsara, seeing there are no fewer beings than before. A bodhisattva's vow endures, unwavering. They continue even longer, freeing infinite beings from samsara. When again they scan the world, certain that this time they've made progress, their tender eyes find there has been no change in number. Disheartened, Avalokiteshvara gives up, thinking, there will never be an end to samsara. It will never be empty. I can't do this anymore. I shall abide in blissful peace for my own sake. That was something the Buddha thought. Nobody's going to see what I've seen. This is too hard to see. I'll just go off. I got it. And then, of course, something interrupted. The Dakini wrench got thrown in. Some voice said, get out there. Some will see this. You got to teach. You've got to. You've got to share what you've seen. So Avalokiteshvara is back in there. I can't do this anymore. But remembers this power, feels this power of the bodhisattva's vow is true. Instantly, Avalokiteshvara shatters, literally falling into pieces, experiencing unimaginable anguish. They shudder and weep. But a bodhisattva's refuge never falters. The agony invokes another Buddha who appears by their side and gives 10,000 more hands, eyes, and arms. And Avalokiteshvara is no longer the same, nor are they entirely different, like us. Avalokiteshvara didn't give up the first time, nor the second. This is kind of paraphrasing what Lama says. They keep at it. It is the last straw that breaks them. Think of the latest one that has broken you. This heartbreak is not a punishment. It originates from our resolve and is a testament to our love. In this unique time, yet Ava does not bounce, this is important, does not bounce back instantly, ready to dust off their vow and take it up once more. Now, it's not just like, no, there's a lot of weeping, a lot of anguish, a lot of giving up and putting back together and breaking apart before they really feel the refuge of the vow come through. I appreciate that. So it's unique time of collective disbelief and sorrow. And we too can grant ourselves the time to fall, to experience our pain, to tremble and sob. And we need not rise up instantaneously as we're rising in some way, blind to our own care. Even Bodhisattvas pause, she says. Avalokiteshvara did not rush to fix themselves, nor do they deny their pain. Unashamed, our heart cries out for relief. We too need not to repress our hurt, nor pretend we are just as we are this morning, burgeoning with hope and possibility. Even Bodhisattvas grieve. And then the force of Avalokiteshvara's refuge, this possibility of goodness, takes over. In the depths of despair, when we cannot imagine what comes next, nor muster the strength to do it even if we knew, we need not worry. Refuge, too, is interdependent, each part acting in concert with the other. To the extent we can remain receptive, its unfailing aid revives our bodhisattva hearts. That's what we can give to one another. So some of us aren't loud or out marching or do, but who are you meeting? What can you give? Just this bit of kindness and attention is, if it's to one, that person meets all those other people, and there it goes. It radiates over the entire world. Do you see this? I see this. In all the doom, scrolling, I mean, communication, it's wild how it's helping and how teachers said long ago that could be our like failure or our success, like it could be incredible. And it's bringing things close. Out of our very discouragement that broke Ava's, I'm going to call her Ava, them Ava for a moment, for the time, commitment fashions new instruments for the way ahead. Like that once shattered vow, Ava's transformed, standing in their fresh power. So we have to keep making fresh. Use what you can to help yourself make fresh, right? When we look upon samsara, still we see there will never be an end to samsara. It will never be emptied, but we see it renewed and clear-eyed and can respond. So, Chioni, with this and that, I tried to keep the bucket together and the bottom fell out. As students of the Dharma, we live between keeping things from falling apart and letting them falling apart. Knowing how to keep things together is a valuable skill. It's really a valuable skill. Look at Chioni, how she cared for that bucket and tried to patch it. So that's a skill too. Falling apart, keeping together. In the commentary on this koan and the hidden lamp, Boyd Sensei, who is actually the first woman black teacher transmitted to in the United States, She's the last name we chant in the list of women ancestors, Kodo Boyd Sensei. I've had the opportunity to meet her. She's as true as her words. She says, true freedom comes with the recognition that we and all things are without self. The one who is liberated must be allowed to disappear like the water and the moon. Practice gives us the freedom to keep things together or to let them come apart according to circumstances. Maybe over time we can learn to trust this kind of freedom, the freedom of living where the moon does not dwell. For as long as space endures and sentient beings exist, may we too remain in this world to relieve the suffering of all beings. This bodhisattva vow is immense.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about the Zen Center of New York City's programs, retreats, and residency, or to make a donation, please visit our website, zcnyc.org.